Welcome to the Justified Podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Justified on FX/Hulu. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Justified City Primeval Season 1, Episode 4, Kokomo. I was looking for it. I was going, okay, how are they going to get Kokomo in here? I was thinking maybe Indiana, you know, they're not crazy far. From Indiana, they could hop down a ways and end up in Kokomo, but no, they're singing songs about Kokomo, Beach Boys songs.
Aaron lives in Kokomo. It's not a paradise.
No, you wouldn't want to go there if you had millions of dollars to relax.
It's a fine town. It's just northern Indiana, flat as hell. Not much to do.
Yeah.
Cold as hell in the winter, hot as hell in the summer.
When they say there's more than corn in Indiana, they're not talking about Kokomo.
No.
Talking about Indiana Beach. Great. So.
That's right. We have a beach. Are you asking me what I think about this episode?
I'm getting there, yeah. What do you think?
Okay. This is your classic kind of moving things in, introducing new factions. They had to get the Albanians on the table. Confirming that Willa's gone, like, to the extent that, like, I'm not even sure how the hell she gets back. I'm assuming it's going to be Clem doing something crazy, or maybe the Albanians that put her back on the board, but not even a hint. Like, well, I guess there is a hint. There was a cell phone shot of her as Raylan was, like, you know, thinking about her and his life choices. This episode, I think, mostly moves forward the entanglement of Raylan and Carolyn, it felt like to me.
Yeah.
Like, are they going to fuck?
I don't think so. I mean,
Why not? The sparks are fucking flying like grinding sheet metal at the end of this episode.
I mean, Raylan Givens is a 10. She's like a 5. I was going to say 6.
Whoa.
5.
Yeah. Okay.
She's got some money, but she's got a shitload of baggage. And look, she doesn't keep herself in shape the way that Raylan Givens does, you know?
I mean, some people like the shape that Carolyn's in.
Judging by Raylan's past flings, I don't think he's into that shape. I'm just gonna say
damn. All right, some strong opinions from Jim, but I mean, I think that's where, I mean, it seems like that's where the show's going.
Does, like, it, I don't know, it seemed to me like he's connecting with somebody here, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're gonna fuck.
I think if nothing else, she wants to climb the tree.
Who doesn't on this show? Okay. I mean, Clement, given the chance, would climb it.
And I want to talk about that.
Okay.
I don't know. I think that they have been showing that these two have a lot of chemistry. His daughter's trying to get him together. He's down there bored. And I mean, just the way she's saying, oh, you're going to stay here all night? And oh, I'm just shooting for my hip. It's a flirty exchange.
And they're drinking. You never know.
They're drinking. Get booze Blanton's involved. Is involved.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, if it happens, it happens. You know, I'm not necessarily against it. I just think, you know, Raylan's not. It's not the bush he's beating around, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. There's a lot of complications that are being introduced in the plot, and this is kind of like mid-season Justified, where, like, you think you know the shape of the game, but then you're going to add a whole bunch of new players, and you're going to have criminals making mistakes that is going to further complicate things. I said, I mean, there wasn't like a singular piece of action, I guess, other than Lol Garage getting his leg crushed. That's the big action of the season. What did you think of the episode?
I like it. I think the setup of the Albanians is going well. You know, I really like seeing Toma, you know, his attitude about, like, justice and the law, and his, like, respect for Raylan in a way, but also disregard for his wishes. You know, he's going to do his thing regardless of what the marshals or the cops say about it. And he kind of just doesn't give a fuck. And I think that's a dangerous guy. You know, this is a dangerous group of people. And I'm excited to see how that all plays out, because now Raylan is sort of indirectly mixed up in the same shit that Clement is mixed up in, right? Like, Clement crushes Skinder's leg, and so he's on the hit list here, and Raylan's douche cop partner goes out there and shoots one of them, Now Raylan's on that list too, potentially. I know he didn't directly, he wasn't directly involved in that, but he was there and in the situation, so you never know.
I think it's a classic, you know, it feels like you're introducing a neutral third party into the conflict, like Limehouse and Noble's Holler.
Sure.
And Justified. You have like a separate faction that has no love for the police, kind of keeps to themselves, has a code of honor and internal justice that they're seeking. Yeah. And that sometimes they make for allies for Raylan. Sometimes they're not exactly antagonists, but hindrances. But they're always working to like cross parallel purposes. And I think the they got a cool hideout, the Venus nursing home.
I guess so.
Limehouse had the butcher shop. I think it's it's crackling with possibilities. I really like the Tolma guy.
Yeah.
The Albanians are scary. It's good stuff. And Brill continues to be like,
ugh.
Are things coming to a head between him and
I
Raylan?
Certainly hope so. I hope this is kind of the you know, we're at the halfway point with this show, right? I kind of hope this is going to be the change, the catalyst that Raylan needs to sort of kick some ass here instead of following their lead in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I wonder if Brill's going to be taken down by something in the judge's book, because like I don't see how the show just like puts Raylan against the cop. They're going to have to make him like, and I know it's fucking crazy to be like, well, he's just a bad cop and he hurts people and he doesn't follow the law. I don't think that's enough for a television show to turn a cop against another cop.
Sure.
Not in real life, not on a television show. So he's going to have to be like dirty with a capital D. They're going to find some entries. He's going to be doing, you know, maybe some cover up for. In fact, I wonder if that's one of the things why he is so fucking crazy about charging ahead and putting a target on Clem, is because he knows that there's something out of in the wind and out of pocket, and he's been trying to, you know, work for something that we haven't probably met yet. Larger and more powerful shadowy force in Detroit.
Because
that's the only thing I can see, and that's what I want. I want to see Raylan and him square off, because this guy is just fucking too much.
Oh yeah, fuck this guy. It does feel like there is one more shoe to drop for sure. Like this book with the list of, you know, bribes in it. Maybe it stops at Judge Guy, right? Maybe he was the ringleader of it and now he's dead and we'll just discover that.
Seemed like he had a lot. I mean, the whole show has been telling us that like there is a lot of bodies metaphorically buried in here and nobody wants them up walking around. And the thing is, it would be very unlike Justified to reveal a big bad and not have us have some familiarity with them. I'm trying to think of any time that there's been like a larger fish in Justified. Maybe there's that one episode that they had the Sorkin brother show up, that like maybe, and they've definitely had like Miami Cartel, you know, type of heavies that come in at the end of the season. So maybe that's what it'll be. It'll be like a mid-season reveal of who the actual, you know, what is going on with the Judge Guy corruption aspect? Because we haven't seen anybody, unless it's like, you know, Wendell's boss or Raylan's boss. We haven't met anybody really higher up in the food chain that hasn't already been killed or taken off the board. So that's what I'm looking for, is to see what other piece of the puzzle is going to drop. Otherwise, this episode has some really good Raylanisms. Like, he does some cool things that I like. I love when Raylan dissuades a bad guy from doing something just by kind of like raising his eyebrows with a gun, you know, like, no, seriously.
Like, oh, that's your move?
I'm not the guy you want to try to rabbit on when I got the gun pointed at you. And it works on a very tough Albanian guy.
Probably would have worked on both of them if not for the victim here losing her damn mind.
Yeah. And understandably,
I get my teeth pulled, I'm gonna be pissed.
And then him rolling up on the two B team Albanians and just a wordless exchange on their part, just running them off too. It's good with this. There was the hand on his hip. It was good stuff. Good Raylan stuff.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. Maybe we should get into the recap.
Let's do it. There ain't nothing in life that comes for free. That's why we had this ad break.
Yeah.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
It's the 40th anniversary of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom this week. And while the movie might be old enough to belong in a museum, our podcast is brand new. So join us for a conversation on the third or fourth best Indiana Jones movie, depending on who you ask, this Wednesday.
And if retro adventure movies aren't your thing, well, maybe you'll enjoy a time warp in the form of a prequel with the theatrical release of Furiosa. Flashback with us to a time when Charlize Theron looked like Anna Taylor-Joy. And strap in for another epic George Miller action movie this Thursday on Bald Move Pulp.
And finally, we're wrapping up our four-week coverage of the 1980 TV miniseries Shogun. Get the final verdict on Yabu, JB, Mariko, and the rest of the gang this Thursday on Bald Move Prestige.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Home is wherever the podcast takes me. Welcome back to the Justified Podcast.
We start off at 9:53 p.m. Don't know why we need to be so specific, but maybe it's important. Clement smashes Skinner's leg in the panic room door and threatens to kill him if he tells the police. Good news, Aaron. Skinner is alive. I was going to say alive and well. But he's alive.
Mm-hmm.
His leg is going to need some attention, and he's going to get it. But
he's got five more bones in his body than he did the last episode. So
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. I'm excited to still have him in play, I guess.
Yeah. I wonder if we'll ever see him again.
It feels like we moved on to bigger bads. He was never a very big bad to begin with, right? He was the thread you pull to find the bigger bad. But he's entertaining, and I would like to see him back. He's like Jeremy Davies, you know. I would love to see more of him in the show.
Yeah, that's a good comp. Yeah. And I don't know, maybe he can get too big for his britches at some point, like Jeremy Davies, and then he's even more entertaining.
Anyway, Raylan arrives at the hospital where Skinner's being patched up. The cops discuss their next move. They decide they're going to check out Sandy's last known address. They're going to watch Delweem's condo and also the casino where Sandy works. And then Raylan also learns about Skinner's uncle, Toma Kastiat, the head of the local Albanians.
Yeah, I like Wendell. Everything about him, everything about him is coded as highly competent. Like, you can't get better than Raylan barking out a bunch of seemingly common sense orders, and Wendell mm-hmm. rolling up and being like, "Hey, already on it." Like, we got, yep. you know, like it shows that he is at least as smart and competent and diligent as Raylan. I like that.
I wish Raylan was working with him more, because
yeah,
isn't he supposed to be his partner on this case? And I don't see them together often. It's more Douche Cop and Raylan rolling around. Maybe Raylan's just trying to keep an eye on this dude.
It's a task force, especially now that the judge has been killed. But like, yeah, honestly, you could do a lot of addition by subtraction just by Brill taking a sick week. You know, just let Mo, Wendell, and Raylan handle this. That Trinity gets this shit done.
Mm-hmm. And he's good for the show. You know, he's like Kai Winn. I love to hate Kai Winn, right? She's an extremely well-written and acted character in Deep Space Nine who you're designed to be hated. This guy's the same way. I hate him, and they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, I kept on waiting for them to like do the jig where it's like eventually Raylan and him will kind of see eye to eye, and maybe he'll you know be a little bit more towards Raylan's side, clearly no. And now I'm like, to the extent he's such an asshole, and like Raylan even calling him out and being like, "Look, you and I kind of barely on the same side. I want this, and you say you don't want this. You want vigilante side justice." So now I'm thinking, it's going to be dirty. He's going to be bent. Raylan's going to expose him. Probably put a plug in him. We'll see.
Hopefully, if there's any justice.
It'll be justified.
Capital
Obviously
J justice.
It'll be justified.
Yeah.
It'll be justicely justified.
And he's getting dangerous too. Like in my notes, when they go, you know, to meet the Albanian boss, I had, "Don't take Douche Cop with you. He'll only fuck things up." And that's exactly what happens in this episode. He gets everybody in hotter water. So. Yeah, this guy's becoming a danger to Raylan, I think, with his hot-headedness, his sort of gusto for punishing people. That's all potentially going to get Raylan killed.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree, and I will break that down, the threat, I think, when we get to that scene.
Gotcha. So Raylan does ask to meet the Albanian boss, and his guys call him up, and he agrees to meet with Raylan to try and solve their mutual problems, as Raylan describes them.
They're doing some hat-based humor. So there's the biggest, longest-standing inside joke in the show is that Elmore Leonard envisioned Raylan wearing a much smaller cowboy hat. Which is like a businessman Stetson. And if you wonder like what a businessman Stetson looks like, think about the famous scene of the assassination of the Oswald. Who's the guy that killed Kennedy?
Oh, Patton Oswald. Yeah.
Yes. If you see the famous scene of Lee Harvey, Patton Oswald being assassinated in Dallas, all the people around him are wearing business Stetsons, essentially. Cannot imagine Raylan. That's a boss hog hat. Like that's something that's like bankers, the all hat no cattle type of like. I think that Raylan needs like a much larger iconic kind of like 1850s lawman hat. But like, it's not the right hat, and Elmore Leonard hates it. Or when he was still alive, it was always a source of consternation. There's been several times where they kind of tease that Raylan might be wearing the wrong, or someone will make a comment on it. And I think this Angron guy saying that, what is that, a Stetson 10X? I think is kind of another poke at the hat culture of the show. But I have no idea, because as far as I know, 10X is a quality of the rating of a hat. It's a ratio of how much like good stuff is in the material versus bad stuff. Like if you got a beaver hat, a 10X might be 50% beaver, 50% felt. And they go all the way up to like, I guess 500X if you want like a really multi-$1,000 cowboy hat, and as low as like 1X if you just got like a shit straw hat. So I don't know, like is saying it's a Stetson 10X is, because I think that's more or less what it is.
How does this guy know that? He's an Albanian living in Detroit. Like
he likes that's I don't know. It's
he's not wearing a hat. If he were wearing a hat, I might understand it, but he's not.
Well, if he didn't die this episode, I would think that they were setting him up as a bit of a gunslinger, that he's, you know, maybe grew up watching cowboy movies, because they've once in a while done that, where they'll have like a very dangerous, you know, gunman that goes against Rayland. And but no, he's dead. So like, I just think it's another one of these subtle hat based dig humors at Rayland's incorrect hat. But I'm not steeped enough in cowboy hat lore to explain it. So if you understand all the memes about Raylan's hat, write us in justified@baldmove.com. That sounds like a fun email to read.
All right. Well, let's move on to Sandy smoking up to cope with what Clement did to Skinder. Clement gets the judge's diary out of the toaster, and he says he smells money. This was pretty obvious, right? Nobody was fooled by the toaster thing.
Yeah, I will say it's one step more sophisticated than just putting the diary in the slots like I thought. Uh-huh. He actually got a screwdriver out and took some things apart.
Yeah.
So good job on that. But the show just keeps telling me that Clem's stupid.
Yeah.
He might be clever, but he's kind of dumb. Cause like who puts a paper thing in a heating element that is designed to, like, you know, that you leave bread in for too long and it catches on fire. Like, that's just like storing it in the fucking chimney of a Dickinson's home at Christmas. Like, you're just asking for you better hope that you're there all the time Sandy gets in a mood for a bagel, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Gotta be there every breakfast. I mean, it sounds like it's the last place you'd look. Which means, you know, it's probably a pretty good hiding spot. Surely he wouldn't put the paper thing in the toaster. No, the whole scene is saying Clement is kind of dumb. Or maybe not that he's dumb, but that he's not thinking about the things he should be thinking about. Because, you know, and also that he has this bizarre attitude where he's the hero in his story and everybody else is kind of doing the fuck ups, right? He talks about how Skinder provoked him by not having any money, by him being wrong. Clement was wrong, and that was a provocation from Skinder because he didn't have any money in the safe house. And then he's talking about Skinder like, Skinder lollygag ain't nothing, and he ain't got no body. And he's 100% wrong about that. He couldn't be more wrong about that. So every time they show Clement making moves, they're the wrong moves.
And they're succeeding because he's extremely lucky, which is another thing the show has been saying time and time again, that this guy is not smart. He's not like loyal. He's not a good tactician. He's just the luckiest motherfucker alive.
Yeah. And he's able to charm the people in his orbit into doing things for him. You know, or con them into it in the case of like Sweetie here, who I don't believe for a second is getting 50-50 of this blackmail job.
Oh, yeah. And the other thing is, like, they show the trauma, the psychological effects of, you know, clearly Sweetie has gone through a bunch on this guy's behalf. And Sandy, she's smoking up like she's on fire here. You know, so jingle jangly from just crushing a man's leg. She's the one who had to push the button, by the way, which I thought was intentional, that, you know, that he is making her complicit for no fucking good reason. And it's just he's acid. He's corroding everything that he touches.
Yeah, for sure. All right, then we get back over to Raylan, who's taken to Venus Adult Daycare, where he meets with Tomah. Tomah thinks Skinder is an idiot man-child, but he won't tell him to give up his attacker's identity because he wants to extract what he views as real justice. Order and justice are not the same thing in his mind. And Douche Cop drops Clement's name. Raylan says, hey, look, I'm first in line for Clement. And Tomah's like, yeah, well, you better get him quick or he'll be dead.
Yeah, apparently they don't believe in queuing in Albania.
No.
Just first come, first serve, baby.
Is that how they ran the hot dog stand? Do they have people fighting at the gate?
That's true. It's just like a Wall Street stock market floor. Just everybody screaming with cash and there's dogs being thrown. And
yeah.
I don't know. I thought this was a really cool cut. Because, like, tell me if I'm wrong, but I got the distinct impression that this is like a mafiosa or whatever the Albanian equivalent. Like, this is a retirement mm-hmm. home for old gangsters and like their wives and girlfriends.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because he's saying yeah. like
the clientele is satisfied. Yeah.
And it doesn't look like it's like super in shape, but like the, they're all throwing bones, like playing dominoes. And he says something like, I hope that when I'm so old that I'm cared for with such like what tact or delicacy or.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the implication is he moved his mom in here. It was a shit place, not run right. He hasn't really cleaned it up, but like people are damn to do whatever the hell fuck they want, I guess now.
Apparently, yeah. Hopefully they're getting the care they need too. I don't know. Cause
yeah. Yeah, like, you know, like but I thought that was kind of interesting, and just the it's such a novel place for a crime lord's den, you know.
Uh-huh.
the administrative offices of a nursing home.
Yeah, is it like Goodfellas where, you know, they've got all the old guys in the jail and they're cooking up, you know, gravy and the old sausage recipes.
All these guys have like leg bracelets on. They're all, you know, this is like minimum, you know, well, you're too old to be sent to prison, grandpa. So we're going to remand you to the tender embraces of the Venus adult retirement community.
I mean, maybe, but I don't know. Just in the vibe you get there. It's like all these old guys just having a good time.
To your point about Brill.
Ugh.
It's like when I was first watched this episode and he blurts out Clement Mansell, I'm like, oh my God, is he just an idiot? He thinks this is like some kind of police tactic to kind of like get a reaction out of the guy. But no, exactly. He outlines like, no, this is a win-win for me. Either the mm-hmm. Albanians fuck up and we find Clement, or Clement gets cut into tiny little pieces. Win-win, you know?
What about scenario where you show up and the Albanians start shooting and you all die?
See, scenario? I think Brill would be like, well, I would simply not do that.
I would simply not die.
I would wait until the Albanians go and the Clem goes and there's a bunch of bang, bang, bang. And I wait until all the bang, bang stops for a couple minutes. And mm-hmm. then I go, like, he outlines it. Like, this is the plan. Like, there's going to be a big shootout. One person will walk away and we arrest that person.
Uh-huh. Sure. If you have complete control over the situation. But I think this has a way of spinning out, right?
And Raylan cares about people getting hurt in the way. He cares about people
for
like
sure, yeah.
Carolyn, even Sandy, who's complicit, but mm-hmm. like in over her head, like Carolyn is. He cares about the wrong people getting hurt. He cares about himself getting hurt. Because like you said, those bullets start flying, crazy shit happens, you know? Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, who knows what could happen? Who knows where they'll meet these people and how it'll go down?
But I guess it's one of those things where like, Raylan really feels that like kind of serve and protect. Like he would not, I think... Mm-hmm. be able to stand outside while an apartment building is being shot up, whereas Brill would be like, I'm going home tonight, so fuck all those people, I'll wait until the shooting stops and then I'll go. It's just a different way to look at the job. Like Raylan's like, I think that my job is to arrange a meeting with the judge and to get this person put away so they can think about what they've done for a long time, and Brill just wants them off the streets dead or alive.
Yeah, and then this is all kind of outlined in the second part of that scene, right? Where Douche Cop says, yeah, I dropped Clement's name so we could tail the Albanians and they'll either get him or the Albanians will. And Raylan says they want him in a cell, not in a grave. And Douche Cop has another opinion.
Yeah, like that's just an opinion on our job. Like, no, that's the core underlying fact of the matter, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole wearing a badge, like you'd be more comfortable playing on the Albanians team.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, he doesn't take, I don't know. He doesn't take his job that literally. Right. He probably thinks that by sicking dogs on criminals and dropping names and putting hits on suspects like that, he's serving and protecting.
The public understands that. That's part of the job. And they secret, like, you obviously can't pass laws like that, but they expect a little brutalization of criminals, you know, a little extra punishment on the top.
Yeah.
And if you can kill somebody so you don't even have to put them in the prison system and pay for them, even better.
Yeah. That's probably his thought on the matter. I'm just glad that. Raylan's kind of leading this investigation. I don't know. It gets more and more questionable about who's in charge here every episode.
I feel like Brill has, yeah, like Brill was openly vying for the lead in the first episode. Now it's more he's recognizing Raylan's authority, but also just doing whatever the fuck he wants.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like he's actively messing up the case. Fact.
Like he's calling Raylan boss, but mm-hmm. it's always in a dismissive manner, like, oh, here comes the hat when all the fun work's done, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You being made by the target and get your ass ran over.
And I don't know what authority Raylan has over this guy. Can he fire him? Can he demote him? Can he just lodge a formal complaint? Can he do nothing? Because he's openly defying him at this point.
Yeah, I wondered that too. Because like I don't think he can like dismiss him from the service.
Yeah,
or get him fired.
He's not a cop. He's a marshal.
But surely, if you're the lead investigation, you're a federal agent, you would be able to have the authority of like, I don't want this guy on my task force.
Yeah, you would think so.
You know? But we'll see. We'll see. And I, you know, Raylan maybe he's trying to be a team player. That's not Raylan. Yeah. What the fuck am I?
Yeah, he's in a strange city, right? He doesn't know the lay of the land quite yet.
True.
He's starting to get it, but like this
Wendell
guy, man.
And Mo, just let this, uh-huh. just cut this guy loose, man. Cut this guy loose.
Yeah, that'd be the smart play. Anyway, let's go over to the casino where the Albanians ask around for Sandy's address and her boss won't give up that info. So they follow him to his car up on the top of a parking garage where they grab him and threaten to kill him unless he gets Sandy's address from HR. These are the guys you don't want to fuck around with, right? Skinder is kind of a joke. These are the muscle.
If you thought the Albanians were jokes because of Skinder, these scenes should just say that, like, yeah, like, because I think that if they didn't have these scenes and Raylan goes up to Caroline's, like, you should be afraid of these people, we'd be like, whatever, hot dog, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, it's Skin, he's not the typical example of Albanian gangster. He is.
He's the idiot man child, is what his uncle calls him. Yeah.
Yeah, like what Raylan says is like, your nephew, imbecile or no?
Mm-hmm.
These other guys are, I don't know how smart they are, but they're serious. They're serious and capable of doing violence.
Do you think these guys also have panic rooms? Do you think Toma has a panic room? And what do you think's in it? Because it's probably not music for the women, right? And video games for the men.
I bet he's got a panic room in that,
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. What he has in it, I don't know. Probably cash, probably weapons.
A year's supply of chocolate pudding.
Or maybe it's just like Skinder. That's the one thing that they see eye to eye on. Like you got the
sure. It's a sound system and a TV.
You got the mini fridge and the hi-fi. What more do you want? You got something for the guys, you got something for the girls, you know. You shut the door, you hang out for a couple of days, everything blows over.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know the lighter haired Albanian muscle's name. We find that Agron, but I don't know the other guy.
Yeah, I don't either. I was looking for his name on the second watch and we never quite get it. So Angron's friend. Man, Sandy's boss is a fucking idiot. I can't believe a guy has this run in with obviously dangerous dudes and he just goes out to his car at the end of the day like do 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 do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I have words with a guy in a bar, I'm watching my back walking out that front door an hour or two later, you know, because like he doesn't ever know people waiting in the parking lot and jumpy. This guy just has no, just gets back. Like, I don't think he gets out of this no matter what he does.
Sure,
but at least
sure.
have your head on a swivel so you see the bag coming, dude.
Yeah. Like Carolyn later in the episode, right? She knows what's up.
Yeah. Right. But Sandy's boss, bit of a dipshit. He's already going to work on the next girl.
Mm hmm. Speaking of Carolyn, Carolyn's client's complaining about his ankle bracelet being too tight when Raylan arrives at her office. Raylan tells her that the Albanians are after Clement and Sandy and probably her too. Carolyn's not worried, says she's going to continue providing her client with legal representation. I assume, so there are two things happening here, right? Like Raylan's trying to impress upon her how dangerous the situation is for her. And yet, Carolyn also knows that it's dangerous for Clement, too. And she's kind of okay with Clement getting got.
Yeah, I mean, like, even last episode, she's like, do your job. Like, I think she just does. She's trying to protect Sweetie, point blank, period.
Mm-hmm.
Clem, defending Clem is means. And also, she is a criminal defense attorney. She defends, like, this is her job. But I think, all else being equal, she probably wouldn't take Clem as a client.
Yeah. I think she, I'd like to know more about her history at this point. How much danger, how much violence has she seen? You know, is she somebody who can handle herself like an Ava in that situation? Or is she someone who doesn't realize the actual danger she's in here until it's going to be too late, right? Come home to really affect her.
Yeah, I mean, I think as a defense attorney, a high profile one that, you know, has made a lot of money and all that, she would be pretty comfortable dealing with like Clem types. But Clem is he's a specially unhinged type, I think, is what they're trying to tell us here.
Yeah, that's what Raylan says, right? This isn't like your typical cases. You know, you might play this hard defense attorney in the face of people who are willing to use legal means to strong arm you, but these are violent people who might want your blood.
She says something later on about, like, once I get home, I can handle myself, which implies to me that she must have some sort of arsenal, maybe panic room herself, and knows her way around it. Uh-huh. But, you know, I don't know if you've heard of America. There's millions of people with guns out there. How many of them actually train? How many of them actually, you know, could back up a threat if people were coming at them? I have no idea. Like I said, is she the Ava type that's going to roll with a shotgun or?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure she would do what she could. I just wonder if this is in her history, right? Has she had to do that before? Or is this something that is entirely new, like Raylan's trying to impress upon her?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And, like, you know, this is a constant theme this season. So far, you do your job, I'll do mine, we'll see what happens. That's kind of like Raylan gets to serve her that back in this episode. But that's, you know, like, she doesn't see a way out right now of her situation.
Yeah. And there's a real short scene after that one where Wendell calls Raylan and douche cop to tell him that the Albanians have left the casino and they moved to tail him.
Because he's an effective tail. He doesn't get spot when Brill's not leading the 6'5" guy hiding out of the casino tailing these guys. No one makes him. Brill can't do the same on the streets. Crazy.
And then we go over to Sweetie. He gets some bad news about his insurance claim on his bar. Should have got that cop insurance, Sweetie. Could have told you that. Sandy and Clement show up. Sweetie says,
"Can you get a law enforcement writer on your business?
I don't imagine you can, but I feel like maybe you should be able to. Yeah. Certain people might need it."
Is that true that insurance agents will deny a claim because the cops did it?
I mean, they deny claims for every reason, you know? And then it's yours to fight it.
True. I guess that's true.
Yeah. They have entire departments. I used to work for an insurance company. They have entire departments devoted to denying people's claims.
Sure.
And, you know, they would say that they're for, you know, properly servicing the claims, but really they're looking for the loopholes.
Yeah. Well, that sucks.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, the cops can apparently come in and bust you up, and you got no recourse.
Were you surprised? Well, I mean, you do have recourse. Like, I think you can go through the city, but, like, I've heard that it can take years to get. You will be made whole, but, like, those particular wheels of justice grind pretty slow. And even then, it's not even a guarantee. But were you surprised that they took this gun kind of off the table? You know, I thought that they were going to, the confusion over who has what and whether that's in the river or not, I thought that was going to be the engine that kind of runs the back half of the season. But they're like, nope, fuck it. We're taking the engine apart, draining it of gas, winterizing it, putting it in the shed for storage. They must have something, this book, they must be pivoting to the book or something else that's some big MacGuffin, because I thought this gun was going to be it.
I did too. There's the book in play, and the Albanians are in play now too. I think those will be probably enough to sustain it. But yeah, I was super surprised by that.
And Sugar still got the, or not Sugar, Sweetie, still got the gun. And Clem's not even that eager to get it back.
Yeah, he doesn't ask for it. Nothing.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh yeah, you got it? All right.
Interesting. You'd think that'd be like, you guys, especially since Clem's not very slick about asking for things that he needs and wants. He's either playing this extremely cool or he's got another way to that he thinks he's got to hook Sweetie somehow.
Does he think maybe Carolyn can shield him from this? You know, he's got this high profile defense attorney who, you know, it would be easy, I guess, to prove that the gun was the gun that killed the people in the Wrecking Crew killings.
It's
but is
easy
it
to
easy
prove
to
that.
Put him there? Is it, you know, you have Sweetie's testimony, right? That's the thing that would do it. But is that enough? Or does he think that Carolyn can get him out of this? I mean, he'd be barking up the wrong tree there because Carolyn, I think, wants him to go down.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know.
And is actively helping Sweetie.
And using the word think in terms of like Clem's plans, I don't know if
fair.
Like, because he just thinks he's invincible.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly, yes. I don't know if he thinks he's going to be shielded by Carolyn or something, but like, I don't know that it. But I also think he might have something else up his sleeve. We'll have to see.
Yeah. So Sweetie says, you know, I think you were trying to set me up by having Sandy plant this in my bar. And he says, you can make it right by paying for the damage that the cops did to it. And Clement shows him the diary and says his money's right there. He also tries to give him this ring from... He tries to give him Sandy's ring from Skinder's panic room, I think.
Yeah. There's his engagement, Albanian engagement.
Oh, yeah.
There's a couple of really interesting things where, like, they're pointing to Clem being a flimflam man. Like, the fact that he is offering to pay his own debts with other people's money. The fact when, you know... He talks about his Walther P-38. Yeah, that's a good gun. That's a genuine World War II replica.
Genuine replica? I guess.
Yeah. It's a real replica gun. That's true. But like those words don't usually go together.
Yeah.
Like, you took that off a dead Nazi? Okay, cool. But you just bought it because it's... What? You know?
Yeah, I don't know what his deal with the gun is. He seems really, like he would want it back, but he doesn't care.
It's his
weird.
Gun. His gun. I don't know.
Very strange. Let's go over to the Albanians breaking into Sandy's dress, and they tie up the current occupant. We'll find out that's Sandy's roommate. Hina, and they threaten to pull out her teeth unless she calls Sandy. She's apparently Laotian because the subtitles say she's speaking Lao.
She is, like, as the guy says, brave. Like, I cannot believe how much piss and vinegar is in this woman. Even like when the guy pull, I thought the defiance would fade once the guy pulls out the pliers, but she still has got spice for him. She's like, oh, what makes that an Albanian tooth extractor? I'm wounding it. Yeah, shit gets real when the pliers come out, man. and you're zip tied to a chair.
Yeah, I don't think I would be doing what she's doing here, but you know, good for her. She only gets one tooth pulled, I think, in the end.
Yeah, I couldn't quite tell because they threatened to start with molars. So, like, I wasn't sure what they were implying when he was pulling out an eye tooth. And it's like, are she's missing some molars or is that the first one? Or I don't know. But I also like the guy when he's explaining how the more and more teeth are extracted. He's like, it's like pyramid sets at gym. Stack that weight on you at the end.
So Hina calls up Sandy, who's at lunch with Clement, and says that a water pipe broke in their apartment and it's headed for stuff. Sandy wants to leave in the middle of the meal, so Clement calls over the waitress, not to get the check, but rather to complain about his steak. And then he tells Sandy, look, I'll buy you some new shoes. We're not leaving until I get my steak. And then the Albanians tell Hina that if Sandy isn't home in 20 minutes, they'll start pulling her teeth.
Such a chode. way. Like, I mean, look, man, if you order your steak rare and it comes out medium, send it back. But the most passive aggressive way possible. Oh my god! But you know, Clem, I've it's been said he's a bad dude.
Yeah, he sucks.
Being rude to waitstaff, relatively minor, but it just really sets me off.
Does he not get the check here because he doesn't care about Sandy's emergency, or does he not get it because he knows that this is bullshit?
Yes, the latter.
Think so?
No, he's the whole, like, his whole effect when he cruises by the flat and Raylan is dealing with all this bullshit and he waves is not a man like, oh my god, I dodged a bullet. It's more like, yeah, it's exact, yeah, thanks for taking this bullet for me. I think I
can see it. Yeah, that's the thing. It's a legit question here because I know he also doesn't care about Sandy's problems.
This
he
is
only cares
true.
About himself. So it could honestly be both.
You know, it could be that it's a dude. It's another fucking instance of luck, and he's not shocked because he just assumes it's going to work out in his favor. Like, oh, look at, not like, oh my god, I dodged a bullet. More of just like, oh, look at this dumbass marshal. Like, maybe he doesn't even think about it.
Could anything shock this guy? I mean, the police showed up and arrested him, took him in for questioning the last episode. And he didn't seem shocked by that at all.
True, he's pretty what you call a hardened criminal.
Yeah,
I don't know, man. I could buy either, but I guess I think Clem is clever but dumb, you know. He has like minute to minute tactics down pretty, but like he larger strategy and like, you know, how is this all going to fit into you being king of the city? I don't think he's got, so like I could buy that.
I just know he's a White Stripes fan because he keeps mentioning White Stripes stuff. He keeps playing it on the radio. Dead Leaves in the Dirty Ground. Yeah.
Oh,
that's a White Stripes song.
Gotcha.
Which, you know, that might be the only thing we have in common. All right, let's go over to Carolyn telling Sweetie that she talked to someone in the prosecutor's office and they are willing to give him immunity if he hands over the weapon and testifies about the murders. She urges him to be a snitch and he says, got another opportunity I'm going to pursue, and tells her about the judge's little black book.
Does Sweetie take this deal if the book is not on the table? Because I'm trying to think of like how much of this was like, I'm not going to snitch, and how much of it is I'm not going to snitch when I have a better option. Because he seemed pretty keen to make a deal last episode, but he also might have been under the illusion I can just give him the gun and that'll connect, and then I can just, you know, I don't have to do anything. Because it's almost like the public image of him. Like, he wouldn't mind snitching if it didn't blow back on him. I don't know.
I mean, I can see it with how interested he was last episode and how, you know, pissed off he was last episode at Clement. I could see him justifying snitching, right? Like, he thinks Clement planted this gun to try and get the cops to take him down for the Wrecking Crew murders.
Yeah.
That's snitch worthy, I think.
Right. So his whole thing is like, it's this, because like, it's kind of like, you know, people saying that the Amish are dumb because, you know, they don't believe in electricity, when honestly the reason Amish do this stuff is a lot more complicated than that. It could still be dumb in your opinion, but it's not just because they don't believe in electricity. Is it possible that, like, Sweetie, it's like, I don't use the system to solve my problems, but if someone's using the system to try to fuck me, I will use the system to fuck them back. And
could
once
be.
He realized that that's not what was going on here.
And he now has another option, you know, like you said.
Yeah. I think it's both. Like, I do wonder, like, you know, when it comes to principles and stuff, it's like if it, because he says, I didn't know how he was moving and now I understand. I think that's like, I thought he was fucking me over and now I know he's not. But also, I now know a way I can fuck him over, like, just by might, by the right of my own cunning and might. You know, I'm not going to use anybody else. I guess it all tracks out.
And this opportunity is big, you know. It's not just an opportunity to get a bunch of money for him.
Yeah,
there's more to it, right? And this is what I love about justified villains. They're typically a lot of them can be very sympathetic too. Like, this is an older guy who his life just keeps getting toppled over, right? Like, the cops bust in, break up his bar. He got screwed on the whole Wrecking Crew thing by somebody he thought it was his friend. And he says, I'm tired of waiting around for the right thing to happen. And yeah, the guy's getting old. When is his life going to give him a break? You know, and this might be it. And it's not just about the money. It's about justice, you know, in a weird way. He feels like he's owed something by the world. And now is his opportunity to get it.
Yeah.
So it's more complicated than that. My bigger question is, what is Carolyn going to do with this? Is she going to take this opportunity to become a judge? She says it's a dangerous game, right? But that doesn't mean she won't play it.
And the way she said wading around in murky water is how you get bit made me instantly think of alligators and, you know, the it's not the bayou. What is it? The mangroves. And it makes me think of the Everglades and Florida. Are we going to are we going to end back up in Florida? Is someone going to get eaten by a gator?
Maybe.
Like, I mean, this is this kind of stuff that you look back and call foreshadowing. And
didn't Willa mention
on a gator farm? And this season, like, I think all roads are leading back to someone getting bit by a gator.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love to see it.
And that would also put them back, because isn't that where is Willa in Florida? Or is she living? Okay.
Pretty sure she's in Florida.
They're all living. Okay.
There was a season of Justified that dealt with some people in Florida, right?
The first season was, later.
What, one of the he wasn't a big bad, but he was an asshole running a bar in Florida, right?
Oh yeah, the
or
crow,
did he come to Kentucky to do that?
I think some of the crows came back with Alicia Witt, like she was the redheaded, like the smart one that was kind of trying to do. Yeah.
So I could definitely see us spending some time in Florida, because you almost have to get Willa back in. Play.
That's the thing. Like, I think the Clem is going to go crazy, going to want, like, just going to want revenge, going to want to try to hurt Raylan, going to try to track down his daughter. It's going to lead him getting bit by an alligator.
So what makes this personal? Like, I feel like there's always an element of this is personal from the villain side of things when it comes to Raylan. And like, so far we haven't really felt that. What is going to make Clem feel like this is personal? Because I don't even know if killing Sandy does it, right?
Yeah.
He's untouchable in that way, it seems.
We don't know how to hurt Clem yet. We don't know what is important to him. And I don't know if we'll ever... Yeah, I mean, because that's the thing. It's like, to make it personal, I'd have to know how you could actually hurt Clem.
Right.
Humiliate him. Maybe just humiliating him. Like, if Raylan got one over on him in a way... that it's like, you know, Raylan's just doing his job, but like Clem can't imagine, you know, this happening to him unless somebody's got it out for him, right?
I guess the only thing he cares about is his own image of himself.
Like, but it could be like, I don't know that Clem needs a reason to make it personal, because it's like showing up at, because he's like,
sure,
he interpreted like Raylan talking in his official capacity as an investigator to his girlfriend, who we agreed he does not give a shit about. He interpreted that as like, well, you're talking to my girl, I'm gonna talk to your girl. He's very tit for tat, like confrontational that way. So I don't know he needs a reason. Like, it could be like, if Raylan's through some no fault of his own, Sandy gets killed in the investigation, I could see Clem, not because he gives a shit about Sandy, but like Sandy is his property
and Raylan took that from him.
Property, now I'm going to go and fuck with your girl or girls.
I can see it. That might make some sense.
But, how we get from there. Yeah. That seems like that makes a lot of sense for the end of the season, but how we get there, anybody's guess.
Mm-hmm. And I'm super curious to see what Carolyn's next move is. I think she's tempted by this, but, you know, she's got some interactions with Raylan in this episode that I think might ground her a little bit more.
It's what she wants. Also, like, what Sweetie is saying here is kind of roughly how she was raised. So she sees the appeal of all these people doing so many unfair things to her. You know, her filthy ex that's running around, getting her into debt and fucking her. Like, what if she could solve all those problems with a little bit of help of Judge Guy's corruption? I think she sees the appeal, just like Sweetie does. Like, I can just do this myself. I don't need any handouts. I don't need to beg. I don't need to kiss ass. I can just make it happen. I can be a player.
Yeah. And you might be safer than you would be if, you know, you stepped into those waters, because like Judge Guy didn't end up so well. He ended up dead. I don't know if that would have happened without Clement in play, but it seemed like it.
And you got to remember the law enforcement is still laboring under the impression that all of this is connected. The Albanian, the judge, and they don't realize that these are entirely separate crimes that are just motivated by Clem's capriciousness.
Yeah, we'll see when they finally realize that. So Raylan arrives at Sandy's apartment, and Douche Cop suggests they wait for Clement to show up, but Raylan decides to go in, and they bust in just in time to catch the guys in the act of pulling out Hina's teeth. But she causes a ruckus and gets Agron killed by Douche Cop. And then Clement and Sandy roll by just in time to see Raylan and the body in the street.
I gave Brill a half point of respect that he actually backed up Raylan on this play, because I was thinking that he might do something to get Raylan like hurt.
Yeah, but it comes out of Raylan's point stash, right? Because like, I don't know that I trust this guy to get the front door.
Yeah.
Like at this point, I would not trust this guy, period. And you cannot run with a partner that you don't trust.
True. But like I said, he could have fucked over Raylan here, and he didn't 100% fuck him. So again, sure. half point of respect.
Yeah.
And he's in a negative 20 deficit right now, so he's got a long way to go for even the break even on respect, but you know, he didn't do the worst thing here.
I think this is a great scene. The resolution of the scene, I think, is great. The ending where, you know, Raylan's staring at this body in the street. The consequences of this action, I think, are what he's looking at here. He's like, wow, man, we just took out one of the Albanians. This is going to be a real problem for us, because now they're going to be gunning for us, too.
Okay, I don't know if I agree with you there. Do you think Toma really is so deranged that he's going to go after the cops? Like, I think a gangster as old and successful as him is going to be like, I sent my nephews there. The cops showed up and they were actively pulling teeth out of this woman's head. Like, I don't know that you start murdering federal cops just because one of your dudes caught a bullet in the lawful prosecution of their job, you know?
Like, that maybe not, like, but I also wouldn't be the guy who's telling the cops, look, you better find this guy quick because I'm going to kill him. I don't know that this guy has
a lot of restraint. Brill. You think they'll come after Brill and like Raylan will get mixed up in that?
Look, the way they've described the Albanians are they are fiercely loyal to their family, right?
But they're not fools. They're not like stupid.
I don't know. Is it foolish to start a feud that will last generations and decimate both of your families? Probably. I don't know. They strike me.
A feud with the federal government, though. Like, I guess sure, that's no, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, it would be a stupid move, but justice might demand it. You know, their own honor might demand it.
I just always realized that, like, I kind of judge everything as a baseline of like what would Vito Corleone do. I feel like Vito, if Sonny, his own son, when he was 18, 19, run around, held up a liquor store, got shot by cops.
Yeah, he wouldn't
does he like take out the lieutenant that was over there? Like, I don't think so. I think he probably's like, you know what? This is fucking Sonny. It's a hothead. He got his shit wrecked, and this should be a lesson to everybody. But like, I don't think he goes wages working. So like, I don't know. Is this guy, I thought that he was more of in a Vito mold, that he's a little, you know, like he definitely is going to get his end if he can possibly do it and get and mete out the justice that he thinks is warranted. But he's not going to like take his whole family down because of it. And that's like fucking killing a marshal is what you're.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see,
you're
man.
Detroit we'll Albanian see. And you kill a federal marshal and you think you're going to get away with it? I just don't know. I don't know about that. But you might.
He might not think he can get away with it. He might just...
Maybe just flee
like
the
I
old
said,
country.
It might not be a case of like, oh, I think I can get away with it. It might just be a
it's
case of
like,
justice demands it.
Yeah.
You killed our family. We have to kill you. There is no question here.
He'd be significantly dumber than Vito Corleone.
Sure.
Which is fine. Sure. Criminals can be that way.
We mentioned Jeremy Davies earlier.
Yeah, they frequently
are. Also significantly dumber than Vito Corleone. Yeah.
Yeah, average criminal, probably dumber than the average civilian. I'm
Dewey
saying.
Crow, significantly dumber than Vito Corleone.
Definitely. Could not yeah. run a family.
No. I don't know. And then the you know, the ultimate ending of the scene where Clement and Sandy roll by and Clement just slow motion finger gun at Raylan.
Like, he was already too much when he waved at him, but then when he turned into the finger gun and gave him a parting shot, like, oh my God.
Yeah. We're
waving a red flag at the bull.
Mm-hmm.
But I did also love Raylan pinning that tough Albanian guy just with, like, you know, just like with extra emphasis of his gun and a disapproving facial expression. Just like, just
yeah.
don't.
Classic Raylan. Yeah, nobody had to die in that scene either, but Hina just couldn't contain her rage, right? Like, you pulled out my teeth, you son of a bitch.
No, I mean, that's the thing is Hina's like, she's a formidable woman. She's done got her teeth pulled out of her skull, and she wants a pound of this guy's flesh.
Yeah, she got more than a pound. She got it all. All 220 of it or whatever. So let's go over to Carolyn, who leaves her office late at night, notices someone tailing her, and she calls Raylan and leads the Albanians to his location. Raylan sends him home.
Oh,
yeah.
Are they doing something interesting there with, like, the Albanians? He had this whole thing about courage and how it evaporates, and, you know, Hina, when she got a turn the table, she's like, goes after this guy, gets one of them killed, and then this guy goes out and cries like, you could say, a little baby about his partner. You know, he's just in anguish.
Mm-hmm.
So whose courage crumbled?
Yeah. No, that's fair. I mean Hina yeah. remained defiant to the end, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I just a fun little note.
Yeah. And she was very brave. But Raylan spanks these Albanians like little children and sends them home, telling them Carolyn's off limits. And then Raylan goes to Carolyn and says, tells her what happened at Sandy's place and that the cops are going to guard her house, even though she doesn't want them to.
Yeah. The sparkle in his eye when he goes, hey, I'm just doing my job. But you know, like, this is part of what marshals do is I guess that's one of their larger jobs is, like, they provide courtroom security. So she's a high value part of this investigation, and she's going to get protection.
I keep wondering if there's a reason she doesn't want this, because she really protests a lot about Raylan putting cops at her house. And is this, she doesn't want them seeing something that's going on there? Maybe the Jamal stuff might get a little hairy if they go digging around, or something else. Her connection with Sweetie, I don't know.
That you just said it. I think that, like, this is a very Sweetie way of looking. Because even she says, like, what would happen if someone sees you out here? Like, what if it gets True. Out that I'm asking, like, I requested police protection because I'm a... You know, it's like showing a weakness. It's sending the wrong symbol to your hothead outlaw client. Like, I think, yeah, there is some reasons to fear. And also, she's proud. She's proud. And she's
There's
independent.
That, yeah.
And she's gotten this far in life, much like Judge Guy, defiant. Like, I made it this far in this racist-ass town with anybody's help. I don't want some tall white dude in the cowboy hat helping me now. I think it makes a certain amount of sense.
Oh yeah, I think that's the plain reading of it. I just wonder if there's more to it, you know.
And also shows that she's smart, because, like, she's like ready to poo-poo Raylan, like, look, I get, yeah, okay, I'm in danger, but this is my job. But, like, when the shit is hitting the fan, she's not so stupid that she doesn't call Raylan and have him deal with these dangerous dudes.
Yeah, she's not just gonna drive home and think I'll deal with them when I get there.
Yeah, she's not delusional.
Right. No, she seems smart and capable and proud and all the other things you need to be in her position.
And again, I can't get enough of Raylan, you know, essentially just using a sheer force of will to repel bad guys. It's, you know, it's like very polite, but he's got his hand on his hip.
Yeah, they got to go back to Toma and say, well... We were tailing her, but the cops, that Raylan guy, he scared us away.
Yeah, and I wonder, I guess, does Toma say redouble your efforts? Or it's like, yeah, okay, well, you know.
Yeah, this is not the last we've seen of the Albanians, certainly. whether they try to revenge kill Raylan or not, they're still in play. So Sweetie goes to Weems' condo, where Clement woos him into joining the blackmail job with a rousing rendition of the Beach Boys' Kokomo.
So last week asked if you thought there was a little hint of Sweetie and his employee, which I guess his name is Trinnell, being gay. And I thought it was interesting that he invited Sweetie down to Aruba in like a couple's vacation. So I'm thinking this is almost confirmation that Sweetie, now I actually think about his nickname Sweetie, that's like kind of, you know, a way to refer to someone being swishy.
Okay.
There's a little too much sugar in the blood, got some diabetes, he's sweet, Sweetie. Like I think all, and in this scene, I got the clear idea that Clem has used his sexual wares on Sweetie. That Sweetie is like actually sweet on him. That they used to be former lovers,
like back in the Wrecking Crew days.
And I'm not saying that two guys can't dance together and like a joking camaraderie. I could dance the Beach Boys' Kokomo with you, and it wouldn't necessarily be gay. I'm just saying the way that Shelley was looking at them, and you know, the way to like Sweetie kind of like, you know, is mad at Clem, but he can't. It mirrors so much what the relationship between, it's not Shelley, is it? It's Sandy. Mirrors so much of what Clem's doing with Sandy, and I don't think Clem's above. Like, I don't know whether he's heterosexual, bisexual, gay. What? I think that Clem is all about Clem, and Clem will use people how he sees fit. And I don't think he's above using his sexuality to control people. And
I mean, he's waving his package around like nobody's business.
That's another thing. Yeah. Like, well, I don't know. Honestly, you can,
that robe closes. Don't bullshit us, man. That robe closes.
Yeah. And I like his robe game. I like that. This tidy whitey stuff though.
Oh yeah, it's. I don't know. People
those look like vintage too. Like those are 1970 Fruit of the Looms he got at
that's
Goodwill.
Pre Calvin Klein shit right there, man. That's
Yeah. It's pretty sure my dad wore that shit when I was a kid.
But he's shameless about it. He rocked that stuff.
Yeah, I think Shameless is exactly Clem, and I think he's kind of shamelessly flirting with Sweetie to kind of seal the deal.
Yeah, it could be that. You know, suck him in, if they did have a relationship before, kind of sucking him into old times, right? Like, old times, but better, you know, because now we got an even bigger score. The Wrecking Crew stuff, remember how awesome that was when we both got away with a bunch of money? Well, yeah, times 10 that, and that's what we're looking at here, buddy.
And you know I'm not going to screw you because you're so instrumental to the plot. You know this. I don't know the city. Right. I don't know how to get at these guys. It's all you. It's all you. And yeah, we'll split things 50-50, Sweetie. Of course we're going to. Like, he's just, yeah.
And that's the hilarious thing is he's right about that. It is all, it is probably all going to be Sweetie right up until the point where he doesn't need him anymore. And then he's going to take all the money.
And Sweetie's holding the murder weapon with his hands bloody, and the cops are wee woo. And Clem is nowhere to be found. But I think I think the Sweetie, like, it's not that he's immune to the charm, but I think Sweetie is, you know, maybe this worked 10 years ago, but like, I think he's been through this cycle with, and he's going to try to keep a clear head.
Yeah, this is going to get interesting, I think, because I do think Clem is trying to play Sweetie, and I think the opposite is true. I think they're both trying to play each other here, and that's kind of exciting. Because I think Sweetie is much more... the impression I've gotten from Sweetie is he is more cautious and a long-term thinker, whereas Clement is impulsive and kind of dumb. And to see those two go head-to-head, I think is going to be super cool.
Agreed. And I also say that I'm not 100% sure on the sexual dynamics thing. It's just a thing I've been picking up. So
Yeah. If they're doing it's fairly subtle. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then we go to the final scene here where Carolyn notices Raylan staking out her house and goes outside to share some bourbon with him. And she asks what his plan is. And he says, just shooting from the hip. Which is so Raylan.
Fucking Blantons.
A little Kentucky bourbon for the Kentucky boy. She knows.
I got a bottle of Blanton's for Christmas like 5 years ago, and I was so excited because it's one of those, you know, it's uh-huh. it's especially now, it's like getting up there, one of those like
hard to find
bottles.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh man. And I finally cracked into an opening, and I'm like, this is just bourbon. I think it's one of the most overrated of the highly sought after bourbons, but it's super recognizable and everybody knows it.
I'm kind of with you. I had Blanton's years ago before it had that reputation.
Yeah.
When it was just like, oh, it's the cool bottle with the horse on top, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. It's collectible.
Uh-huh. It's got a neat topper. And it's like $45. You know, it's not that expensive. Uh-huh. It's maybe double the price of a normal bourbon, but it's not, you know, Pappy Van Winkle, like Grandpappy or something. I'm with you. It's good bourbon. It's not like
it's good bourbon.
I wouldn't pay hundreds of dollars for a bottle.
That's the thing. Is like I've had good bourbon where I like, you know, I sit back and like, God damn, that is a good bourbon. I can understand mm-hmm. why this is like, you know, worth its weight in gold. But Blanton's was kind of like, ah, is this twice as good as Jim Beam?
Yeah, like for sure it is, but it's only twice the price of it. So
twice as good? I don't know. I don't know if it's twice as good as Jim Beam, because Jim Beam's a hell of a well whiskey, in my opinion. But I don't know. I just thought, but like, yeah, when the sure. Blanton's bottle came out, and then they shit talk Blanton, both of them. You know, she acts like this is like fucking hooch. This is like straight this is like straight moonshine, and Raylan's even like, yeah, it tastes better if you do something, light it on fire. And I'm like, God damn. Wow, you get a bottle of Blanton's, you just run it down. But
well, I mean, fair. The sparkler thing is, you know, about his daughter buying her the drink, right?
Oh, silly. Oh, of course.
Yeah, he's like, it tastes better with a sparkler. That's
okay. I thought that he was trying to make some joke about like toning down. It's like, I'm like,
no, I think he likes really. It. She's not a bourbon fan, no, but she knows he likes it, and he does.
Yeah, because that's the other thing. Is Raylan's odd. Old school bourbon fan. He's waxed poetic about it 3 or 4 times in the show's history. So I was kind of like, wow.
I just assume everyone from Kentucky is legally required to be a bourbon fan.
I mean, yeah.
Or at least pay lip service to it.
Yeah. It's probably get drummed out of the Commonwealth if you.
Uh huh.
Too loud about that opinion anyway.
Yeah. Go to Cincinnati if you're not a bourbon fan. I'm a bourbon fan. Blanton's is good.
Yeah. But. So the other thing is Raylan's out here looking at pictures of his daughter. He's clearly uh-huh. feeling a certain way about him being a dad. And she comes and kind of like pushes on that a bit, but also says, oh, you're free and unencumbered. You're just going to stay out here all night. And that's where we,
flirty.
Yeah, like I, yeah. dude, if they, I'm, I am going to be significantly less shocked than you. If mm-hmm. they start the next episode of them in bed, because I think that's where this is going.
Look, Carolyn's shooting her shot, and I can't blame her for trying. But it's Raylan Givens. The hoop's 100 foot tall here. I don't think she's going to hit that goal. I don't think she's going to make it, man.
Just because to this date, he's only kind of been interested in wispy blondes.
Uh-huh.
You know, maybe he's never gotten like a half gallon of Rocky Road before. And he's like, God damn, I've had these vanilla ice cream cones from McDonald's all this time. And holy shit, look at all this.
Mm-hmm.
Look at all this. I'm just saying, like, I think it's significantly more tempting than you're intimating here. But we'll find
man.
Out.
Well, all I'm saying is you're a man who's used to drinking Blanton's. I don't know if you can go back to Evan Williams.
Wow, this is Carolyn slander.
Okay, Carolyn that's fair. Slander. I don't know if you go back to Jim Beam. That's the 5 out of 10, right?
Justified at baldmove.com if you got opinions on Jim's opinions. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, do you want to get the feedback? You got some more
let's do
closing
it.
Thoughts are justified.
We got to get out of this town alive. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms.
Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. Madman and father of Mad Max, George Miller, is back with another apocalyptic tale from the Australian wastelands.
This time, we're getting a prequel featuring the origin story of Charlize Theron's character Furiosa, starring the Queen's Gambit's Anya Taylor-Joy in the title role and the mighty Thor Chris Hemsworth as the warlord Dr. Dementis. Furiosa promises more high-octane, slightly radioactive action and fun.
Furiosa drives into theaters on May 24th, and we'll have our spoiler-free thoughts and impressions of the film, as well as a discussion of trailers and upcoming movies for everyone. But if you want to ride with us the full length of the podcast on the eternal highways of Valhalla, shiny and chrome, you're going to have to be a club member.
Join today at support.baldmove.com. Get our full discussion of Furiosa and many more first-run films, plus tons of other bonus podcasts and ad-free feeds.
Support.baldmove.com. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Well, I just poured a fresh shot of bourbon. We're back with more Justified.
Keith's up first. We were talking about Raymond Cruz and how what an interesting name Raymond Cruz is. Of course, he's the great actor to portrays Tuco and Breaking Bad. But Keith points out Officer Raymond Cruz is a recurring character in the Elmore Leonard universe. He's actually the original main character in the book City Primeval. He's played in episode 2 by a character actor named Paul Calderon, who also played Raymond Cruz in the movie Out of Sight. Michael Keaton has also played the same character in both Jackie Brown and Out of Sight as well. Paul Calderon is famously the guy who almost got the Jules part in Pulp Fiction. In fact, Quentin Tarantino wrote that part with him in mind, but Samuel L. Jackson blew the audition so far out of the water that he won it. Paul ended up being the bartender in Pulp Fiction. And then in a nod to Elmore Leonard, this Cruz character briefly appears in the second episode. Remember that flashback to what's the name of the gang?
The Wrecking Crew.
The Wrecking Crew murders. He's sitting and it says like an R. Cruz on his little detective patch, his little bulletproof vest, as the camera pans over the cop car. And he's just sitting there smiling.
So no chance that we get the real life Raymond Cruz.
We're not going to get the real life. But for Elmore Leonard fans, I think this is even more exciting. I probably got six emails addressing this. So thanks for the hat tip on that. I did not know that. Scott sent a very long resume showing his Elmore Leonard bona fides. I'm not sure how you pronounce that.
I'm not either.
He's bona fide. He's a bona fide Elmore Leonard fan. And he says, as much as I love watching the increasingly Silver Fox Oliphant swaggering around looking cool, the thing I love most about Justified, the series, is that it felt very Leonard. The show captured his voice and world. And what I'm looking for in an Elmore Leonard adaptation are three things. One, the unique dialogue, which brings characters to life in usually a humorous way. 2, the antagonists, who are usually opportunists who think they're smarter than they are, but are in fact agents of chaos. And 3, nods to the wider Leonard universe with the same shared characters and feel of a lived-in world. I'm happy to report that City Primeval has these factors in spades. A couple of examples so far. 1, the dialogue. You ever watch Yellowstone? I'd fuck the shit out of Kevin Costner. Just scream the kind of dialogue that Leonard might have written. This felt like classic Leonard. They've really nailed that feel. 2, Boyd Holbrook is terrific as Clement Mansell. Yeah. He's a psychopathic opportunist, a real agent of chaos. He might yet be outdone by the compelling actions of other antagonists, as per Leonard's style. Sainey might yet double-cross him, or Sweetie, or Carolyn, his lawyer. 3, there are some names out there that are pretty familiar at the original book and other films, including a surprise, and he talks about the Paul Calderon as Raymond Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how happy I am to see Raylan Givens, and by extension, the Leonard universe back on our screens. I hope this is a success and they come back for more. I will say that, like, I've gotten mostly in the last few weeks praise for this show, but I was looking on the, like, the Reddit, and it seems like there's a strong undercurrent of people not, like, this is getting universal critical acclaim. I'm digging it. But there's quite a few people who are not enjoying it. I don't know how big of a segment of the fan base it is.
It's a loud one. I can't even go to that subreddit because it's overwhelming. 90% of the posts are just hugely negative in ways that I think are unthinking.
Yeah.
It's disappointing to see that happening there.
And there's some, like, I think a big critic, like, I'm not even going to talk about it anymore because it's the same, but, like, I think the music is not as good as it should be. And a Justified show, but also, like, their regular kind of, like, bluegrass might not fit Detroit. I don't know.
I think that the end credits song is kind of cool.
Oh yeah,
I almost think that should be the intro, but
the main one.
Yeah,
and I, you know, like I said, I think that Detroit loses a little bit in comparison to Harlan, but yeah, I 100% agree with you. I do not know what's going on at that subreddit. It's just taken over by... And that usually in a show, in any kind of community, you got to decide, like, you know, when you're halfway through a season, which voice are you going to prioritize? Because if the people that hate the show just are, you know, won't just stop watching and move on to other things, like, right. It makes it impossible for the people that are liking it to discuss it. So I wonder if like they're just being laissez-faire over there.
And do you really hate the show if you continue to come back every week and watch it? I mean, why are you watching if you hate the show so much? That's what I never understand. How can week after week a contingent be out there so pissed off about how bad the show is and yet continue to watch it?
I mean, we did 11 seasons of The Walking Dead, but we were being paid handsomely through a lot of
exactly.
that. Exactly. So
who's paying these people? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. Big Justified.
Yeah.
Is paying these people to shit all of Detroit. I don't know. I honestly don't know. Because like I said, I think you could quibble. I don't know that the Willa is being executed as a high level as it could have been. The music's Detroit's not as cool as Harlan, but like... Yeah, like Timothy Elephant
has
lost a step, and the writers still have an immense amount of affection for this character, and I think are doing him justice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think all the characters are being done justice here. I'm really enjoying watching them.
Reginald says, we had a question about Willa's phone to 3%. You know, like, what is it going to mean? He said, like, a simple explanation. Maybe the reason her phone is shown to be at 3% explain why she wouldn't have her with it. Or she wouldn't have it with her because she has to charge her cell phone in the hotel room while she's downstairs with Clem.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly right. Like, she wasn't answering the phone. They just threw that in for, like, it's not her being willful and she's, like, not answering her old man. It's just that she's wasn't diligent about plugging in her phone the night before, which happens to my 16-year-old. And it's always frustrating.
Yeah.
Anyway, changing gears a bit, it seems a little out of touch for the show to have a 15-year-old girl wearing t-shirts bearing the names of Guns N' Roses and AC/DC. That type of outfit would be more in line with someone a person as old as her father, grandfather, or even great-grandfather would wear.
No, I hate to tell you. The out of touch one might be you. I'm sorry. This is a very big thing. I don't know much about kids these days, but I do know they love to wear classic rock t-shirts, and that includes all the bands you're thinking of as modern grunge. which are all now classic rock. All of my favorites are classic.
And when we were kids, what
we did the
our
same fucking thing, yeah,
with Led Zeppelin, uh-huh, right?
With
that
Rush,
wasn't the
with,
shit that people uh-huh were banging out to in the 90s. And yeah, no. And what's the fucking Stairway to Heaven?
That's Led Zeppelin, yeah.
Oh, that is Led Zeppelin. Uh-huh. What's the other one?
But I mean, the, Guns N' Roses and all the same things.
Pink Floyd.
Yes, 100%.
Who, Doors. Everyone's into that because that was what
the classic rock stations were playing, and they still are, but now they've added 90s alternative.
Yeah, like all of our alternative grunge stations back in Indiana, if you go back, they brand themselves as like essentially classic rock.
Yeah, they have to.
Classic rock is the 90s era. That's where we got old, Reginald. I don't know what to tell you. And I think there's also an element of rebellion here because like Raylan Givens is not a Guns N' Roses AC/DC guy. No fucking way. He was all bluegrass and country. So like she's into the cool bands of her father's era, but not the ones he would be into.
Sure, sure. What's he into? Vince Gill and Garth Brooks? And
that's what I'm saying. Like country has not been in a good place for the last 30 years. So like,
probably.
Maybe he's old school. He's all Hank Williams, Johnny Cash.
There
Chris
you go.
Christopherson.
Yeah.
Willingness, because they there was a lot more like genuine country options, I think, in the 90s.
Yeah, there's some really good country being made in the 90s. I know because my mom listened to it constantly.
Yeah, and I actually am an unironic Garth Brooks fan.
There's a lot of country I like. Reba McEntire is an amazing artist.
Nothing wrong with Dolly Parton as a songwriter. Nothing wrong at all.
I never really got into her.
We got a different viewpoint on this generational thing.
Yeah.
Ashley says, I love the show so far. Have a little bone to pick with your take on Willa's wander around Detroit while Raylan was at work. While I don't disagree, she's a chip off the old block when it comes to her dad. I'm sure Raylan did the same thing when he was 15. The world treats 15-year-old girls very differently than it does 15-year-old boys. And Raylan would have been exploring his hometown, not abandoned warehouses in Detroit. Claire sexually threatens her, and carjackers threaten her also. I've known some teenage girls in my day, and not every girl has the same reaction to finding out the world's a dangerous place that could, you know, just like some people like, you know, take that knowledge and treat it like it is a scary place. And then some people run the opposite way and like, I want to fucking master that world. Mm-hmm. And I think the Willa, she's not stupid. She knows all these things are true, but like Raylan, she thinks she can handle it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you don't think a child molester can pick you up in Harlan County, or maybe even more likely to pick you up in Harlan County than you are in Detroit. I don't know what to tell you. You might get, I don't know, depending on where you're walking around. Harlan could be a pretty dangerous place too for kids.
So oh yeah.
I hate to disagree with two emailers in a row, but like, yeah, it's not that Will is stupid. It's just that she's cocksure, and that's what she gets from Raylan.
Mm hmm.
Can you use cocksure in reference
in that context? Yeah, you could do it.
She's vaginally sure of herself. Garrett Olson says, I never watched the original show, but I'm liking this Justified so far. Is the original show the same vibe? This one feels slightly campy, more worried about the characters and moments being fun than the intricate details of police work or the justice system. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's not that Justified doesn't ever have clever twists, but it's usually not Perry Mason style bullshit.
No, it's not breaking the case through solid investigative work and uncovering a clue. It's usually through extra legal interrogations.
Timing.
You know, sure. There's a lot of just charm that this show exudes that you're supposed to just sit back and enjoy.
There's a lot of MacGuffins and like, you know, the like undercurrents of trying to buy property rights for some nefarious person or trying to buy a location because it has a safe because it's got, there's a lot of like kind of whodunit type stuff, but it's not like Law and Order or even The Wire. And the other thing about Justified is like, I don't think I've seen Justified worse than like a above average police procedural that is also just around a hugely entertaining main character. But like season two of Justified, I've said it once, I'll say it, it's probably in the top five individual seasons of television I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's like fantastic.
I'll put it up there with anything. It's so fucking good, man. So
yeah, and Margo Martindale is like a big reason why, because she's that's where I was introduced to her, and she just blew that role out of the water.
Yeah. And I think that there are a couple of off seasons, but like the other thing, and like I said, the worst it gets is like above average police procedural with a hugely entertaining lead character and excellent dialogue and writing. But like, also, I think the last season ends about as good as I've ever seen a season wrap up. Like, I felt so fucking satisfied as a Justified fan with that final season.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I recommend, like, maybe you'll twiddle your thumbs a little bit during season five, maybe, but you've got a hell of a lot of fun ahead of you if you're sitting down to watch Justified after City Primeval.
Yeah.
That's going to do it for our feedback for Justified. Justified@baldmove.com is how you send us your thoughts. If you want to talk about Stetson 10Xs, Raylan and Carolyn getting busy, whatever.
Sweetie and Clem getting busy.
Sweetie, Sandy, Clem. I've this big old freewheeling three-way. Who knows? Justified@baldmove.com. If you'd like to follow what we're doing other than Justified, because we're hip deep in Foundation, we're wrapping up Star Trek Strange New Worlds. A lot of stuff going to be coming down the pike in September that we'll be getting into. All the social medias, @baldmove. You can follow whichever one is your favorite. Follow, except for TikTok. That's Baldest Move there. And then finally, if you want to support what we're doing, you can join our club, support.baldmove.com, to get more Bald Move content, ad-free feeds, and exclusive access to the VIP sections of our Discord and our forums. Support.baldmove.com. That's it for this week. We'll see if Raylan and Carolyn wake up together next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.